Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're talking about 12 of the best race day tips, and we're joined in this incredible endeavour by Kate Carter. So welcome, Kate, to the podcast. Welcome back. You're normally in the guise of science correspondent, but not today. Race aficionado today.
Today I promise to bring no science whatsoever.
This is all hearsay and conjecture, so congratulations. Yeah.
So those interested in even more race day tips, there's 47 of them in the current issue of Runner's World. We only give out race day tips in prime numbers. We had considered, I think, 97 as well, but it was too much work.
That's too many to even to absorb.
Could have been one, couldn't it? One's a prime number, I think.
Good luck.
Yeah. Best of luck. Run, yeah. Best of luck.
It's one of the tips, figure out how many other prime numbers there are below a certain...
Yeah.
And soon you'll be at the end of your marathon.
So we've got, I think, 12 of the best ones for you coming up. So lots to look forward to. Bit of a news roundup. So the big half happened on the weekend.
Sure did.
And Ailish McColgan won in a new female course record, 67.35 for her, and Mo won in 61.49. So yeah, some pretty good running.
It's weird that our performances didn't make the main news reel, did it? I can't
believe we just missed out on the podium, didn't we?
Only just. It was nice though, wasn't it?
It was great to be back racing. It'd been a while for me.
Years for me. Literally years. Years and years and years. So it was good. I've got a race day tip off the bat.
Whoa.
I didn't take like the race bag with me.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I just went with the shirt on my back and that was it, with no sort of like stuff to pick up at the end, and didn't bother with any of that. And if you can, which is, you know, I live in London and the race is in London, so it kind of made it easy, but that was great.
Did you have to carry anything that you wouldn't ideally have carried?
I took a little race belt and then had my phone in that, which I wouldn't normally have run with, but that's not a big deal. And then that just had my gels in it.
Yeah.
All two of them. So that was the and my keys, so I could get into my house.
You also had an two-year out-of-date gel, didn't you?
Did, yeah. And I'm still here. Well, it's just like you said to me, it's like space food.
Yeah. This is one of the Morton gels. And I was like, oh, Ben, I'm quite jealous because I got quite into the Morton stuff. I just ran out and I was like, oh, you couldn't bring a spare. And Ben was like, no, the only one I have is actually March
2020. It's a pandemic gel.
Well, all the natural ingredients in those gels. Yeah, I mean,
yes, exactly. Yeah. It's just overflowing with fruit and no, it was fine. I think that's what actually helped me finish. Yeah. Was it? I think it possibly fermented even to be even more powerful than it originally was.
Actually, alcohol raised by the end.
It's like overproof Morton.
Yeah, yeah. It's a quick course though, isn't it? Like, I mean, there are aspects of the big half that it's not the most aesthetically pleasing, of course. But I think if you're looking for a PB, it's actually really decent. So for anyone bothered, I did actually manage to go under 1:30. Yes. I'm back.
I did not.
Yes.
But that's fine. It was as you say, it's a very fast course though.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it is.
So
it made me think actually. I was chatting to a club mate and I said, oh, I don't think it's the best looking course. And she was like, but do you care? Does it actually matter? And I was like, well, maybe like an urban half marathon. Do you ever do it because it's like picturesque? There were certain races I get that like the picturesque aspect's important, but I was kind of thinking maybe for most people, is it about a PB? And if it is, then does it matter what the course looks like? Yeah. I throw it open to you.
Well, if you're, and also if you're like in, I'm in serious racing, head yeah. down, yeah. tunnel vision mode, how much do you actually look, even if it is? Mm. When I ran a Seville Marathon years ago, yeah. I ended up going back on a family holiday, like about, it must have been that summer. And every time we would walk around a corner and saw something really scenic, my kids would be like, oh, was that on the course? I was like, no idea. yeah. Could not tell
don't
you.
Know.
Did you smell oranges everywhere you went?
I don't know. I was running.
Yeah. 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 I saw the back of the person in front of me.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's fair. Yeah. I was actually talking to a friend of the magazine and a friend of ours and another running journalist who people may know of called Nick Harris-Fry, and he was talking about his training runs, and Nick is the most diligent of all these sort of training in his ethos and his practice, and his training runs are the most boring. If you see them on Strava, he just runs along like an A road for many, many, many miles. And we were talking about him trying to find slightly better routes because he's concerned about air pollution because he's literally just on these roads. But he said he does not care what it looks like. He's just there to get those
yeah,
those
right.
miles done, which proves dividend because he's incredibly fast and does very, very well. But I couldn't do that. And I think that the racing, I can obviously make compensation for like the aesthetic because you're racing and you're trying to go fast, and there's always like an agenda with that sort of thing. And if it's an urban race, then yeah, that comes into play. But I don't think, yeah, I think if I was going to choose races going on, like obviously like a forest half marathon, yeah. I'd be like, yeah, of course, let me do that instead.
I think for training, it is important, actually. The way you feel, I quite like running in parks. I kind of make a sort of point of like running in a park rather than running like on an A road or anything like that.
I think it depends. I don't know. For me, it would depend on what kind of run you're doing. An easy run, okay. like, you know, you're just supposed to do an hour easy run or whatever, then yes, because it really helps if you have a nice route that you're like, oh, this is gorgeous, a privilege to be able to do this.
Yeah.
If you're doing like intervals or something, then I probably would be taking the Nick view of like, yep, that stretch of the A3 is excellent. Actually, in lockdown, when everything went really quiet, I got developed this weird like habit of running down the A3.
Oh, I did a bit of this on the South Circular. Yeah, yeah, it was amazing. Yeah.
But it was genuinely because actually, if you take away all the cars, it's actually quite nice. Yeah, it's just a shame the road's there.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the air pollution thing would start to, having written something about this years ago for you,
yeah.
It would start to alarm me because it is amazing how much difference it makes, even just being like, you know, sometimes on A roads you've got like a pavement and then there's maybe like a sort of road that's to the side.
Yeah.
Even just being on that one, your levels of what you're being exposed to would be significantly less. So
yeah, it's much more local, isn't it, than people realise actually, like
yeah, really
being
localised.
Sort of like the house side of a pavement's better than yeah. like some other news, Bob Graham round record went again.
It did.
Madness that, isn't it? I thought the Killian thing would stand like for the test of time.
I think it's because it had the Killian brand stamped on it.
Totally,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like everyone
yeah.
just, and everyone knew about it happening, and then this one just sort of
came out of nowhere. It's like
slowly in the back. Well, I mean, out of nowhere for us.
Yes,
like fell tracking.
Yeah, it turns out this guy, like I think he pronounced his name Jack Kensel, has been going around getting loads of FKTs in the States. But yeah, he knocked half an hour off it, so it's quite like.
Well, that's because he didn't wear a shirt, clearly.
He didn't wear a shirt, yeah.
And he wore Vaporflies at
yeah.
the end.
Yeah,
I did a little intake of breath when I saw that. Like, ooh, that's going to go down well.
So he's part of this uphill athlete. So this is the kind of training stable. I think Tom Evans is trained by the founder of it. I'd like to get him on, actually, because obviously, like, Tom did brilliantly at the UTMB, came third. This guy's going around, like, just, like, hoovering up FKTs. And I think they train in a way that is closer to sort of mountaineering-type skills. So they're really, really big on, like, vertical gain, and a lot of them are really good skiers as well. But I think it actually be really interesting to get a sense of, like, when there's hilly races, are people actually training in a specific enough way? Or do we just bring in kind of, like, our marathon training
yeah.
kind of head to what actually should be more like a mountaineering type training set, because I think that's how these guys go about it.
Well, let's sort that out, but for now let's
Please just come on. Put
up with us,
yeah. Come on, and here's some race day tips. Yeah. Oh, okay, right, shall I start with number one?
Do it.
Offered by Sam Murphy, who is Runner's World columnist and author of Run Your Best Marathon, among other books, and she says, Racer tip number one, stop drinking in earnest an hour before the race. It's fine to take the odd sip after that if your mouth feels dry. But one of the issues with having a drink on tap right until the last minute is that you tend to drink mindlessly. And by the time you're on the move, you're already wondering where the nearest port-a-loo would be. I think it's a really good tip because I think when it comes to hydration, people do think like, I need to be super, super hydrated on the day. Yeah. And actually, a lot of that work should be done in the days before. Yeah.
And you're going to feel... like the nervousness will and anticipation immediately dries the mouth and makes you feel like parched and so you kind of get this misleading sense of I'm actually very dehydrated at this point. I need to quash my thirst and all this, but actually I think that's I mean, of course it's great advice from Sam,
of course we've come to expect it, but also think like in a shorter race, like in an ultra or maybe even a marathon, if you're not super obsessed on time, like going to the toilet mid-race isn't the end of the world. But if it's a 10k, like it's really that's the end of the PB, isn't it, if you have to go to the loo? Like
margins are not going to be that big.
It's quite a big, it's even a half marathon, like it's a big thing like to try to avoid, I think, like the mid-race loo stop.
I think anything like that, because even just stopping, muscles tend to go, oh cool, oh no, we're going again, oh wait, oh god, that was awful, why have you stopped? Right, okay. Great number one. Great start. Thanks, Sam. Start.
Practical, brilliant. Useful, true.
Number two is from Richard Asquith.
Never heard of him. Who's he?
He wrote a book called Feet in the Clouds?
Nah.
Anyway.
Not my kind of thing.
Waiting on the line, in the moments just before the start, I remind myself what a privilege it is to be a runner. I'm healthy, I remind myself. I'm capable of running. I'm relatively fit. Someone who has put on the race for me and circumstances haven't prevented me from getting there. That's a lot more good fortune than many people get. At least I can do is enjoy it.
It's good for that. Puts in perspective, doesn't it, Richard?
Quite nice and holistic, that one.
Yeah. Wise and wisdom.
I think I try to do a version of that, which is, you know, when you're standing at the start line, you're feeling really, really nervous. I always try to say to myself, oh, come on, get a grip. Literally no one cares except you. Just go and run.
Like, that's the way more sort of like reality check one, rather than his like quite nice sort of like global view of living. And he was like, this is actually your own fault.
Yeah, you paid
You've chosen
to be
this.
Here.
Get on with it.
I think on a kind of slightly more practical level, it's like, we tend to concentrate on things that have gone wrong in a race, don't we? Like, I was so unlucky that I got a stitch or whatever. And you don't think, actually, the train was on time. I felt like a little bit this with the big half. I was like, the train was on time, managed to get here to start. The weather's relatively good. Yeah. Those are things that have gone well, actually, that might not have gone well. But you kind of just think of, like, good things as being, like, neutral or default, and it's only the bad things. You're like, oh, I missed the water station. My God, you know. Yeah. What a chance. So unlucky.
So unlucky. Well, actually, it's all been pretty good up until that point. No, that's fair. That's fair.
Oh God, this is from me, the third one.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll read out your tip. So, tip from Rick. If you're running 26.2, embrace the positive split.
There it is.
While negative splits are an effective elite level racing strategy, the vast majority of us will run our best marathon via a slightly positive split. So going through halfway with a 1 to 2 minute time buffer allows for a little bit of late in the race slowing, rather than asking your body to run the second half faster than the first.
I think I'm right about this. I know it divides the crowd a little bit, but I do think like just putting a minute, I'm not talking about like go through, you know, in your half marathon PB, but just a little bit up on what you want to run the marathon is. I think it's just a more realistic strategy, and it doesn't get enough press. Positive splits looked at, I think, too often as like, oh God, you went out too hard.
Like a failure,
like
almost.
Like a failure, yeah. And negative splits are sort of like, I don't know, the final frontier of marathon running. And I just don't think it's practical for most amateur runners to actually run it that way and expect to actually get quicker as the race goes on, I think.
I think there's a sort of a nice... Because obviously to actually do that correctly, you need to build that into the beginning of your training. So all of your work needs to be done in the premise that you're going to be like running the race in that way.
Yeah, I think, you want to just decide it on the day. Yeah, sure.
Because if you go like, oh, I'm actually just going to, you know, like, because what that does is then that really allows you to consider the first half of the race the harder bit. Do you see what I mean? See, kind of psychologically, I think that positive split is actually quite a good thing. Like, I'm going to maybe run the first half harder or a little bit faster than I would have thought of, but what I'm doing is I'm allowing myself that buffer,
a little buffer,
and I think that then obviously you train to be faster than the second half. Do you know what I mean? You can kind of give yourself a bit more wiggle room. Obviously if it collapses completely, then
it can be taken too far, can't it? But like,
yeah. I'm going to give myself 20 minutes of buffer just to ease out that last half of the race.
But I just think, I mean, we were talking about this after the big half, and you said like after halfway you felt like it was starting to slip, and it's very easy when it starts to slip to like
it wasn't a slip
to just let it slide away.
Yeah,
it slid rapidly and with no barriers whatsoever.
But if you say in a marathon, so you give yourself something to defend, you know, say you get to 20 miles in, you're still on target, or you've got a minute to defend, that psychologically that's so much easier to like to sort of muster some effort if you're like, actually, rather than I need to be a little bit quicker here to actually make my time. I think that's way less likely that you actually do it.
It's kind of counterintuitively, it might actually help you stay more steady as well, because if you get to that point and you're like, you know, I am finding this really tough, because you are human, you just run 20 miles. Yeah. You kind of, maybe if you think, well, okay, it doesn't matter if my next split is
slightly slower,
and you relax, you probably end up running better. You might even go like, oh, hang on,
I can do this. Agree, totally.
Oh, there's nothing that the being able to relax makes. I mean, I don't know if that's on the list.
It could be, Ben.
Could be. Make me lucky number 13. but telling yourself to relax during the race is because you realise that you're not.
Yes, yeah, for sure.
All the time.
Shoulders are up around your ears somewhere.
You've had a bad hill and you've gone too hard and your heart rate's soaring and you're suddenly like, oh my God, this has gone, I've gone too hard. And you go, relax. And you go, oh, I should just relax. This is just running.
This is okay.
This is okay.
This is all right.
Yeah.
Oh, look, a real expert here. Sabrina Virgi, record-breaking ultra-runner and author of Where There's a Hill. She says, 10 minutes before the race, redo your shoelaces. Sometimes laces become a bit loose, so I always try to remember to give mine a final tie to get them to just the right tension. I also think embrace the triple knot. I don't think enough people do a triple knot. Like, double knots do come undone, but the triple knot never comes undone. And you lose nothing.
Is that a guarantee?
You lose nothing with a triple knot. You know, it's like, do a triple knot. Do a quadruple knot if you want, Ben. I don't mind.
What if you... But the only danger is, what if you suddenly get something in your shoe mid-race and you've got to try and get that shoe off as quickly as possible?
What
and you're
was
faced
that
with
20-minute gap?
You've got a stone in your shoe and you've got a triple knot to get through.
Yeah, that's true. But I think the relative chances of a double knot becoming undone or getting a stone in your shoe with a triple knot, I think...
Any statisticians out there who know some true life facts? Yeah. No, I think that's a good one. That's definitely a good one. That's a good one. All right, great. Wait a sec. This next one is from Kate Carter, running coach and sub-3-hour marathon runner and, just add it, Guinness World Record holder.
Fastest panda.
Fastest panda out there. When we get nervous before a race, we tend to think quite negatively, remembering all the phantom niggles and dwelling on the things that haven't gone quite right in training. Try to instead remember the positives. Write down 3 things that have gone well, whether it's good training session, working on nutrition strategy that works for you, or just something really enjoyable, or just some of the really enjoyable runs that you've done. Then you'll have positive things to carry into the race. Which is very good, because it kind of, you know, harks back to what Rick was saying, that we look at the negatives and treat the positives as the default rather than the sort of like the benchmark that we should be aspiring to.
Yeah, and I know it's a terrible cliche and everything, but it's like you've done the journey, you know, you've done all the homework basically, and now you're sitting this little exam which may or may not go according to plan, but basically you should be going, I got to this start line. Yeah. This is amazing. I've done all this training. I've done, you know, if it's a marathon, you know, slog through those really horrible long runs where it's like kind of, you know, drizzling and cold and the wind is like in your face on your circular route the entire time, against all logic, and you were knackered from work and you haven't tapered and you forgot your job. I mean, you've done all that. Yeah. You should be going, I kind of rocked to get here.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you've made, especially if it's your first. Yeah. Like, that's, you've gone probably beyond any distance you've ever done before, and you've achieved things already that are like huge significance in terms of your physical capabilities and all that sort of stuff. So I just think that, kind of the race day is the end of the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the whole
celebration.
Exactly.
So a painful celebration of all you've done.
Really terrible.
And if you remember like the kind of the time where, I don't know, it's even like sometimes it's just, oh, do you remember that time when you did the 20 mile, your first ever 20 miler, and at about 17 you were so close to quitting and you didn't, and then you get to like mile, I don't know, 23 in the marathon, and that that little thought is just there and you're, well, I didn't quit then.
Yeah.
And this is the one where I need to really like use that. And it just kind of comes back to you like, okay, yeah, like I've got a positive thing to think of rather than just, I'm so tired.
Yeah.
This is awful. Yeah.
Why am I doing this?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Oh, so here is a quote from Nick Anderson. However great you feel on the day, run at the pace you have trained for. After building into the pace, lock into the kilometer or mile splits that become familiar to you from your race pace training sessions. I mean, that's just that thing where, like, you know, at the start of a race, you feel great because you've rested. You should feel great, you know. Yeah. Yes, marathon pace should feel easy because you've only done 1 mile of it and now you have to do another 25 miles of it.
Yeah. I like the idea that I've definitely, like, wrongly diagnosed myself as being fitter than I am on race day. So I'd be like, I know I was going for this, but actually, no, I'm going to go for, like, this time that's way more, like, and I think Nick's right and it's actually...
you've got to think about future you. That's all it is.
What's future you going to say?
You in the race where you go, you're an idiot.
Yeah,
why the hell did you do that?
Is this where I can mention that this is way more common with men than women?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Oh,
sure.
The ego. Yeah.
Well, this is why women are better pacers than men in those all those studies and stuff. It's not, obviously they're not overall faster, but they are better at even pacing because they tend not to do precisely that, and just suddenly this summer they've got like a, you know, actually, you know what, I was going to go for like 145, but I think I'll go for a 790.
I'm going with the 130 pacer. Yeah
feels
great.
My training was okay, but today I feel
great,
really really good.
I'm always underestimating myself. No more.
There we go. Men particularly, stick to your pace.
Right, number seven. We're over halfway now. Which halfway point?
Is it going to be a positive split or a negative split? Well,
this one's from Andy Dixon, our esteemed editor-in-chief at Runner's World. During a marathon, I try to minimise any unnecessary energy expenditure in the first half. This means not dodging and weaving to make up time if it's crowded in the first few miles, trying to maintain as consistent a pace as possible, not jumping over curbs, running the tangents at sharp corners so as not to slow down by hugging them too tightly, trying to follow the painted racing line if possible, and trying to plan my move early when approaching water stations, often avoiding the first part where everybody tends to crowd in. I think that's really good advice, particularly something like London or Berlin or any of the majors. It's like the first, maybe even up to the first 10 miles, it's very, very busy, isn't it? And you can be like, oh my God, like, and it can be a real stress. Actually, being a pacer is a big stress as well, because it's like, I've got to try and run even splits, and actually, I feel like I'm dodging around people. And one year, I think I ended up running quite close to 27 miles. It was like, I went a lot further than I needed to. And I think it stresses you out as well, which is sort of the last thing you want in the early miles of a marathon, is to be like,
It actually kind of goes back to the previous point, isn't it? That actually, if it forces you to start slightly slower than you were planning to, that is actually a good thing. And I've certainly done, yeah, like the big ones where you start and you feel like you're going really, really slowly because you're kind of like surrounded by a person in front of you. It's kind of, but actually when you look at your split, you're like, oh, that was actually exactly what I should have run.
Because you're in a herd of people all doing the same thing. Yeah. I think it's that sort of people don't, it's kind of like a death by a thousand cuts. That's how that sort of mentality of moving around too much kicks in, because you don't think about it. You really, really don't. When there's a corner's coming up and you kind of, get around that person, that small surge of like extra speed just to nip round or do that. But you do that 100 times.
Yeah, by mile 20, you're like,
oh, wow, I'm...
Yeah. Why am I so tired?
Yeah, exactly. It's a good one. The next one is from Jacob Allen, who is a SOAR team athlete. During my time running at University of San Francisco, I was able to work with a sports psychologist and found a strategy suggested to keep me positive in races really useful. Whenever negative thoughts or self-doubt creep in, I have three buzzwords lined up that help me to relax and get me back in the moment. Your buzzwords should be personal, and I'll keep you guessing on his thing. Oh. He's going to keep us guessing.
All right, Jacob. Yeah, I haven't slept since reading this. My God. It's like a mantra, isn't it? It's the same sort of thing.
Yeah. Like,
but three words, buzzwords is quite good, isn't it?
Like, I guess so. Yeah, rather than like a sentence.
It limits your sort of like having to remember like dialogue.
Well, Steve Way, who, you know, ran in the Commonwealth Games and did really well in Comrades and stuff, he's got a three-word mantra, but I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say it.
I think we need to know what it is, Kate.
His is "don't be shit."
I like that.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Which does actually, I've used that before. If you just like has a kind of real kind of, yeah. It did lead to a really embarrassing sort of thing once. He was running in London Marathon and he was obviously in the elite field. And I got to the big switchback on the highway where like, yeah, the masses are at kind of 12 miles or so and the elites are at like 22 miles or something. And he went past, and I've met him a few times, and so I sort of, as he went past, I yelled really loudly as I was running, "Don't be shit!" Everyone around me looked at me like, "It's a bit judgy." I mean, come on, he's 10 miles ahead of you.
Yeah. Wow.
No, it wasn't.
She's giving the elites a hard time. Wow. Yeah. That's very good. I like that. I'm going to start shouting that at people that I don't know.
Yeah.
But you're right there, Ben, on like, if you say, like, when you're not, right, it's probably easy to pick too complicated or too verbose, a sort of, you know, it's like some sort of sentence you think you're going to remember at mile 20, some sort of favourite quote, but it's actually three words is probably a bit more realistic, isn't it? Be like, I can remember that.
I have run tall.
Okay, yeah, so like instructive sort of
instructive stuff. Because I find that fixes any of my like tension and also posture and like things where like if I feel I feel really sluggish or I'm like this is, seems to have dropped off and I go it's because I'm kind of like collapsing in on myself. So it's like, oh, stand up, there we go, and you kind of feel like, oh, maybe I was just giving myself a bit more forward propulsion, a bit more motion of just being like upwards. That's,
I guess there's sort of two different kinds, isn't there? That's like one where you're actually giving yourself almost like a form tip, a thing. And then there's ones that are just like actually functioning as blocking out bad thoughts. And I guess like, I mean, Paula Radcliffe famously used to count. And the purpose of that was not that it achieved anything in itself, but it's just, it blocks out your ability to kind of have really negative thoughts of, I can't do this, it's too fast. And then you just keep going.
Just keep counting.
Yeah. I tried that count one. She counted to 100, didn't she? Yeah.
It's really hard.
It's quite hard. And I think she was like, she would run a mile or something every 100, but I was like, about 800 metres.
Well, also, I would always get to about 57 and then somehow be like, oh, hang on, I better start again. Apparently, I can't count.
If you go past the mile marker, though, and you're like, 59, 58, mile 12. Oh, I've got to start again. Oh, damn it. Okay.
This is from James Elson, who's the race director of Centurion Running. Make sure you run your own race and not somebody else's. Keeping to your plan and ignoring others around you who might be going off faster than seems sustainable is the key to food and water staying down and to your best performance overall. I guess in someone from an ultra running background like that, that's even like more important because like if you're literally having to kind of eat and drink and worry, manage all that as well. The last thing you want to be doing is suddenly running, you know, oh, he's looking good. I'm going to latch on with him.
I mean, even following people in races, you have no idea. I did this on the weekend, and we seemed to sort of like sit similar. We were kind of like, our pace seemed to be quite similar, but I have no idea what his race ambition is.
Yes.
And he doesn't. And so kind of like I was following him for a bit, and we just sort of naturally were running. But after a while I went, I'm actually following him now.
Yeah.
And like every move he was making, like if he wanted to move, I was like, I've got to keep up with this guy. And I was like, what am I doing? I don't need to follow this guy.
I didn't know this guy.
But then I was looking out for his shoes and his hat as he went off. And I was just like, oh, I'm going to catch this guy. I was like, no, you don't. Stop it. But you just sort of like, because I was in proximity of him long enough that we kind of started technically running with each other. Then it became sort of a thing that like any gap that developed was like had to be shut down, or like, you know, oh, I've overtaken him on the hill. Excellent. And then it would be like, stop it.
Yeah. It's so easy. I did the same thing. And then there was a relay at the big half as well. And I was like, this guy was just a bit fitter than I was and going a bit quicker than I could maintain. And then I was like, trying to like sort of keep up, and that's like the relay section of the handover tunnel. I was like, if this guy's actually doing a relay, this is like, you know, he could easily be doing a relay. There's loads of people doing a relay. It turned out he wasn't. He was just like a bit quicker, bit better than me. But I was like, you know, that would have served me right to sort of actually. It's kind of like outsourcing your race strategy to someone else, isn't it? Like, I'll just follow you, you know.
But I think often, I think we just don't think to have a conversation. I'm like, okay, so maybe you don't have the lung capacity, but like have a word with somebody. If you find yourself next to someone and go, are you aiming for this? Great, let's work together. And then it suddenly becomes a working together rather than a rivalry. Although I've been in that position. So I did the Manchester Marathon earlier this year as a relay. So it was just me and one other person doing the half. And there was a guy, I did the first half, and there was a guy who sat on my shoulder for like about the first 8 miles or something. Wow. And then he kind of, I really felt like saying to him, I mean, if this is your race for the whole pace for the whole thing, then that's great. I'll happily kind of be your pacer, but I think you should know when I get up there, I'm stopping. Then as we got to like I kind of managed to say that, but as we got to the bit where you could see the relay kind of going off to the right, I kind of drifted over to the right and he followed me. Yeah. And at that point I was like, I had to say, you need to go that way. Sorry.
Sorry, mate. Yeah. What? Oh.
But aren't you pacing me through this?
You're doing a third of this? Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lovely idea having a chat in the race, but really.
Right. Here's a nice practical one from Howard Calvert, who is an ultra marathoner and working with Runners World on a fairly regular basis recently. He says, take breakfast with you. If you're staying at a hotel or a friend's house, they might not have your usual pre-race breakfast, so bring your own to ensure you can eat the same pre-race fuel your body is used to. So I think that's pretty good, actually, because maybe you don't consider that kind of thing, and it's, you know, getting the wrong breakfast can have awful repercussions over a marathon.
Well, it's twofold, isn't it? There's dietary issues, and then there's the psychological thing. Whereas if you've trained and you've got used to having your bowl of porridge first thing before you go out, and you know that you've got the slow release energy coming your way, then you're all set. But if you suddenly go, oh, sorry, all you've got is a bowl of Rice Krispies. First of all, Rice Krispies do not fill you up. And secondly, you're just like, well, what am I going to do? I don't know. I've got loads of milk now or something. And anyway, so.
There was an extreme of this I saw at somebody when I was doing Berlin 1 year, checking in to the flight to Berlin from, I don't know, Heathrow or whatever. And you could look around. You're like, oh, yeah, they're doing Berlin. They're all sort of, yeah. No, they bought their own Vitamix mixing machine thingy through hand luggage. I mean, those things have got blades that you could grind rocks with, so it was quite impressive. But also, like, I think they do have smoothies in Germany, you know.
Yeah. That's
they have discovered
commitment.
That.
That's huge commitment.
Yeah.
Don't do that. That's not number 11.
No.
I don't remember the elites I spoke to about it in the course of events when speaking to two different elites. Both of them talked about having the situation where they didn't have the breakfast that they wanted, so they had plain cooked rice with jam. Right. So there's a default for anyone from an elite point of view. That's just pure carbs.
I think that's quite common if you go and do races in Japan. Yeah.
Definitely one of them was you just get the rice and put some jam on it and you're all set. It's like a rice pudding, kind of.
It's like a rice pudding sort of, isn't it?
Yeah. So there you go. If you're ever in need.
Yeah. Rice and jam.
Okay, here we go. We're on number 11, and this is from Tom Craggs, who is the road running manager for England Athletics and actually Kate's coach, most importantly.
He's our guru, isn't
he,
Tom?
And our main
columnist in the coach section.
Currently working on a little jingle for him, so keep...
No way.
Yeah, he's going to have his own jingle.
Oh my God, he's broken the guitar out again, everyone. Okay, ensure you're primed for performance by practicing a pre-race warm-up and routine in your training, which you can repeat on race day. This should include physical exercises like low-intensity running, drills and strides completed in a specific order, but may also include some mental processes and mantras, specific music, or even particular warm-up kit that you like to wear. Performance priming through repeatable mental and physical routines can set you up to deliver when the gun goes. Done that, Kate?
I suppose it's part of the same kind of process, isn't it, as having the same breakfast. It's like your routine, yeah. Your ritual that kind of comforts you. You're doing what you're supposed to do, that you're getting your nutrition on board, and then you're getting your muscles warmed up. And yeah, it's all just part of that kind of taking away stress by worrying that you might have done something wrong. Or yeah. So, yeah, definitely. I'm actually thinking prime for performance by practicing a pre-race warm-up is now my new mantra.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Remember that one. All those P's.
Yeah.
Have you gone to the extent of like taking like a resistance band to the start of a race? Have you ever got that far into
I've done it at an ultra, actually. Yeah. I think particularly if you drive to your race, and it's like, often it's like maybe like, you know, a few hours. I feel like just like sort of switching on a few muscles, actually, like particularly with like resistance band or like the gluteus medius.
Maybe.
Let's go with that. I think, yeah, it's good. I guess I've never taken one to the point where I've got to carry it in the race. So I always try and get rid of it before dumping the bag.
I've seen people using them as well, like for a track race, because, yeah, you've got like, you're going to have a space that you can use it and a bag that you can leave. And
yeah, yeah. I saw some people at the start of the race doing it, and they obviously then put it in their kit bag to drop off. And I was like, yeah, I can see how that can, because, you know, I was rolling around in the grass trying to activate muscles before the race, just, you know, as you do now that, you know, aged gets the best of us. And I was trying to sort of like engage things which had lain dormant for a while. So yeah, I was sort of like, I think that's possibly, it's not too much.
I think particularly for shorter races, maybe everything from a half downwards, like definitely doing some running before you set off, I think, is key. Otherwise, it can be a real shocker for your body.
Do you ever do that? Like, especially with the intensity stuff, would you, I mean, even for, say, up to a half marathon maybe, would you say you have your set pace for the race? Would you go and do a warm-up above, just before, like a few minutes of above that race pace, just to sort of like...
Strides, I would, probably, yeah. Yes, yeah.
So just to sort of make the body go, all right, well, I'm not going to be running that fast, but it's good to sort of like elevate.
It's always hard when you're doing a big race, though, because you always have to be in that pen a little bit earlier, and you're kind of, you always feel a little bit like, well, I've done my warm-up and now I'm just going to go and stand there for like half an hour. Yeah. But it's probably better than sitting, isn't
it? My race tip, which I did this weekend, is just be really late. And then you have to run to the start line.
Oh, wait for
me. A rolling start.
Yeah. Yeah, you run to the rolling start, which is what I did, and then didn't realise I'd crossed the start line. And then just had to keep going. So I was like, all right, I'm going now. This is fine. So away I went. But yeah, so that's one way of getting warmed up is panic. No, don't do that. No one do that. Be well prepared. Arrive on time and take your time. It's the final, well, not the final.
Yeah, it is amazing how much time you can like just eat up doing this stuff, isn't it? Yeah. You know, you've arrived at like a London Marathon or something 2.5 hours before it starts. And I'm like, what on earth am I going to do? And then suddenly it's like, wait, it's 10 minutes. Where did that time go?
Yeah. And why am I now late? I gave myself all this time. Yeah exactly.
So I think this is my turn again. So this is from Courtney DeWalter, ultra runner, all round awesome. Winner of many epic races. Her tip is, when race day arrives, it's time to celebrate. Hey, this is great. This is like I was saying earlier. Yeah, I agree with one of the greatest ultra runners ever. You worked hard to prepare for this day. You are ready. Don't overthink it. Enjoy the simplicity of running. Smile when it's hard and just keep moving your feet. Your brain is incredibly powerful, so there are ever moments where you doubt yourself during a race, pick a positive mantra and put it on repeat. I usually go with, this is fine. You're fine. Everything is fine. I love that.
That's a really good one.
It's a good one. It's got that slight verge of breath. Really is. Yeah.
This is fine. Yeah. Everything is fine.
Yeah. 180 miles to go.
Yeah. It's all good.
Fine. Yeah. And there's just fire in the back of your mind. And everything's, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, she's amazing. And I think it has that kind of like amazing positivity in these races, which probably if you're racing 200 miles as she is, it's even more important.
Yeah, but I kind of like the fact that it's not too, to me, anything that's a bit too whoop whoop, because I'm too cynical, just makes me a bit annoyed. Oh, yeah. This is fine, it's great, because it's not like, this is awesome. Yeah.
Oh my God, you're so amazing to be here and everything is so great. And you're like, oh, it's not actually. There's got to be a slice of reality to like, this is hard, but I'm okay. Yeah. So that's, yeah. Well, if it works for Courtney.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I can enter an ultra then.
Here I go.
Armed with this knowledge.
I will run until no one else can keep up with me.
Yeah. So as there are more race day tips in Runner's World. There are 35 more, I believe. I think there's 35 more than this. So that's reason enough to pick up the magazine, isn't it? And if you've got race tips of your own that we've missed, please let us know. podcast@runnersworld.co.uk. That brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. Thanks very much to our guest, Kate Carter, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can subscribe to 3 issues of Runners World for just £5. Head to hearstmagazines.co.uk/runnersworldpodcast to get this exclusive listener offer. Please do subscribe to the podcast. It is available on all major listening platforms. You'll know this already because you're listening. But just in case, iTunes, Spotify, all the rest of them, go check them out. And thank you for listening. You'll hear from us next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.